We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. It's been a hot minute, I know. I apologise. I've been very busy. Before I do start, though, let me say my thoughts and prayers are with random trending news article number 4, a cause very close to my heart and my newsfeed. And of course, I would like to say that I am completely in support of the team that we are all on board with. Oh, hang on. I'm just receiving word that the team we're on board with has written something pretty horrible on Twitter. And I would just like to inform you all that I never supported the team that we're all on board with. I've always ever been against them. Just an update on what's happening with me. After having lived over 200 days in lockdown, I still haven't finished writing the next King Lear. But I have nailed a pretty good haiku, which I will read for you now. Fuck you, Shakespeare man, if brevity, soul of wit, why your plays so long? Thank you. That is my masterpiece today. I think that has firmly put the bard in his place by combining the forms of diss battle and haiku. You've been served in multiple written formats, bard. I await your reply. Until then, let's get to the headlines. A Belgian digital artist has invented a bot called Flemish Scrollers, which automatically scans the YouTube livestream of Flemish parliamentary sittings and uses machine learning to find phones in the footage. It then uses facial recognition to identify the politicians on their devices and automatically posts a recording on Twitter and Instagram, tagging the politician, saying, "Please stay focused." Speculation about whether the bot could be used in Australia has already started. And the nice thing about facial recognition technology is it is algorithmically biased towards being better at recognizing white people, so should nail it every time. We will have to first set up a bot that recognizes when a politician is sleeping and messages a member sitting closest to them to prod them awake. Then we can probably go to the phone thing. In an attempt to save Tasmanian devils from the facial tumour disease, an insurance population was shipped to Maria Island, causing catastrophic damage to native penguin populations. When asked for comment, they said, "Discovery of the skull of a new human subspecies called Dragon Man has caused disbelievers of the theory of evolution to bring new challenges to the theory. While disbelievers of the theory of evolution are preparing their well-articulated arguments like, where is the missing link between dragon and man, believers are out there saying, oh, now you listen to scientists. Where were you before?" Pharmaceutical company Pfizer has raised the price of COVID-19 vaccine by 25% in Europe. Experts say if the price stays inflated for more than 40 months, please see your doctor for assistance. News Corp Australia and Google Australia have announced that they will establish what they are calling a world-leading education program dedicated to digital journalism, the Digital News Academy. According to the media release, the Digital News Academy mandate is to equip this generation of journalists, editors, and publishers with the skills to empower their storytelling through a curriculum based on the commercial realities of today's media industry. We here at the Bearer of Weird News got an early look at the curriculum and can accurately and truthfully report they will be teaching the following classes: Upskirting Photos 101, 10 Ways to Improve Your Clickbait Headlines, number 6 will amaze you, The Subtle Art of Hyperbole, the greatest journalism tool in the history of ever. How to confidently speculate on celebrity couples, defamation or exaggeration, walking the line, and climate change, debunking the leftist lie. We also managed to acquire some footage of trial classes.
I remember that until only a week before I was arrested, we weren't at war with East Asia at all. It was Eurasia. It lasted 4 years, I think.
Another example. A serious delusion. Photographs about which you've had hallucinations, which you believed you held in your hand. They never existed.
OnlyFans has banned sexual content on its platform in the weirdest way to tell people that it is shutting down its business. Oh, wait, this just in. OnlyFans has decided the last idea was obviously stupid, as it is the only reason that people are there. The original decision was made to appease some banking partners who were being prudish and puritarian. The decision was reversed when the banks realized it was silly of them to get bent out of shape over sexual content when they fucked the entire planet for money in 2008. The Hungry Jack's founder says Australia should learn from the UK and live with the virus. Look, I'm just going to say this shouldn't surprise any of us. His biggest idea was to steal an idea from overseas and start to reproduce it here. Confused anti-vaccine protesters stormed what they thought was a major BBC building. Apparently unaware, the corporation had largely moved out almost a decade beforehand. The building had been vacated by the BBC in 2013 and has since been converted into flats and a private members club. These are the people taking to the streets, screaming that people need to do their own research. They couldn't even find the headquarters of the BBC. Good luck running the Holistic Centre for Crystal Healing and Independent Research. You guys don't even know how to use Google or read maps, let alone an entire paper to peer review. The Sacklers, who made billions from OxyContin, won immunity from opioid lawsuits, setting into stone a precedent that the Dracula family will be able to use to be made immune from all lawsuits on mysterious blood-draining deaths. A Victorian parliamentary inquiry into making it easier for the general public to ride on school buses has begun. Rod Barton, the Upper House Transport Matters Party MP, who pushed for the inquiry, said there was more than 1,000 publicly funded school bus services in the state that could benefit many people who do not own cars and live in regional communities starved of public transport options. Obviously, there were concerns that this might cause the wrong sections of the public to mix with the children, a concern Mr. Barton said was unfounded, as this extremely reassuring and not at all red flag inducing statement reassures. I absolutely understand people's concerns, but we've got to remember there are millions of kids around this country every morning who get on buses, trains, trams, ferries. They're not all getting kidnapped by pedophiles. And look, ultimately, he is right. But it's really hard to agree with a man whose main argument is, sure, we'll lose a few, but they can't get them all. There's just too many of them. Are you kidding? And besides, the ones that are left will be obviously really fast. So we're just making a better Olympic team in the long term. And isn't that the thing we really care about the most? Being the best at sports. And he isn't wrong. Again. Google has said it will introduce a new feature which will notify people when they look up breaking news or other rapidly evolving issues that their search results may be unreliable. Sky News has already started a preemptive lawsuit for all future news articles it is planning on printing, and they are winding up Alan Jones and Peter Credlin to begin the sonic bombardment of reasoning and credibility to confuse their enemies. With travel plans delayed and people having more time on their hands to ponder their future due to the COVID-19 pandemic, fertility clinics have reported a surge in demand for their services. Medicare data shows there was a 35.3% jump in the number of IVF cycles undertaken in Australia in the year to May 2021, which means the COVID-19 pandemic-fueled IVF baby boom is creating a sperm drought across Australia. Gentlemen, this is your time. The pandemic has caused an increase in interest in sperm donations, and you have been stood down, getting in more and more practice at delivering this particular need than ever before. But this time, your country needs you. Yes, times have been hard, but it's time for you to stand up and toss yourself into the fray. We are seeking new members to help keep our future erect, our grand masterstroke to beat off the boredom of downtime during the pandemic. Do you like working with your hands? Well, we have a real hands-on job for you. Saving the future. Are you a real artist with your fingers? We need well-worn willies, pounded peckers. Don't spill that sperm. What do you say, fellas? You up? Speaking of the sexy region, a new Harley Quinn show aimed at adults had to remove a scene where Batman went down on Catwoman because DC says Batman can't go down on Catwoman since heroes don't do that. Apparently DC hasn't seen the first Spider-Man film.
Wait.
Now, there is a hero not afraid to try something new. This unwillingness to give people what they are looking for goes a long way to explain how they've failed to successfully pull off a cinematic universe. That does require multiple people communicating their needs and coming to a satisfactory climax. The reason we won't be seeing the Bat Seduction, the Batduction, according to DC, is we sell consumer toys for heroes. It's hard to sell a toy if Batman is going down on someone. Apparently DC hasn't heard of the lucrative adult toy market that it seems they don't know they're already a part of. Nike CEO John Donahue defended the company's business in China, saying Nike is a brand that is of China and for China, following a consumer boycott in the country. And in all fairness, he's right. Nobody's children work anywhere near as hard for as little pay as the Chinese. It's integral to the process of making Nike runners just so profitable. Scientists have urged encounters with sharks be renamed bites or negative encounters and not attacks. Dr. Leonardo Guada said the change in language matters because it helps dispel inherent assumptions that sharks are ravenous, mindless, man-eating monsters. Although initially adverse to listening to scientists, Scott Morrison has never been one to pass up a marketing opportunity, so has taken the scientists on as rebranding consultants. Because if there's one group of ravenous, mindless, man-eating monsters that needs a rebrand, it's the Liberal Party. McDonald's has beaten their previous earnings all because of a new chicken sandwich promotion with K-pop band BTS. The Australian government, desperate to not support people in need, have contacted BTS about the possibility of franchising their name for businesses impacted by COVID who they don't want to pay. JobKeeper is not coming back. The man in charge of the safety and well-being of our country and Prime Minister Scott Morrison repeatedly insists. Though he did modify an old classic saying, the best form of JobKeeper is a BTS package deal. First up, righting wrongs of the past. No, not those ones, different wrongs from the past. News! Australia. We have America's moral guidance tempered with a British sense of self and humour. As an offshoot of the British Empire, we have a long history of not needing to care that things we have done are questionable. The National Gallery of Australia is set to return 14 works worth $3 million from its Asian art collection and return them to the government of India. Well, I'm sure we've had them for a long time and had plenty of opportunity to not only make money off them, but to think about the historical context under which they were obtained, how we have grown as a country, and how we as a modern society would never do something like this in the super modern world, in the world beyond 2000. Oh, sorry, what's that? 13 of the objects were purchased between 2002 and 2010. Shit. Well, come on. That was 10 years ago. We've changed since then. We've become much less accepting of outside influence, for one. These days, we'd have to lock the paintings in offshore detentions for a number of years before displaying them like a political token on shore. Like, that's how we do it now. Look, at least where we got them was a completely legitimate source. He asked, knowing because he wrote the script. Oh, what? Oh. They came from Art of the Past, the now infamous New York gallery run by the dealer and alleged antiquities smuggler Sabusha Kapoor, who is in prison for allegedly running around $100 million international smuggling racket and received charges of receiving artifacts that had been stolen from disused temples in southern India. Doing well, Australia. For example, in 2008, an 11th century Kola period bronze statue of a dancing Shiva was sold by Kapoor to the National Gallery of Australia for $5.6 million. The statue was allegedly stolen from an Indian temple in Tamil Nadu. Whoops! We did a pretty big oopsie, receiving stolen goods from a questionable source and profiting from them. Oh my, whoopsie doodles. That would be a pretty questionable tone for the country if we were to not return those stolen artifacts, right? Right? So, how are we doing with this handing back of stolen indigenous lands? Oh no? No, we're still not doing that, huh? We're just gonna hang on to those for a little bit. Just a little bit longer. Well, baby steps, right? Baby steps. I mean, the indigenous people are Australian, so we're just keeping Australian land in the hand of Australians, right? Yeah, right. That's fine. Moving on to a workplace treating its employees right. News! Warhammer! The thing you sunk all of your teenage money into, and that is likely why you never got your license. Games Workshop, the creators of the tabletop games Warhammer and its futuristic counterpart, Warhammer 40,000, has had a particularly good pandemic, as a large portion of their participants are constantly behind on one important element, having their figures painted. So when the global pandemic rolled around, that forced people to stay home and, in some countries, get paid to do so, a phenomenon the Galactic Emperor would have hated. The God Emperor would never have allowed citizens to sit around while the forces of Nurgle overran the land. No. Rather, he'd have sent wave after wave of men directly to their death rather than sacrifice the economy. Sorry, the Empire. Why am I talking about Games Workshop and Warhammer? Well, because Games Workshop has handed all of its staff a £5,000 bonus after lockdown sales surged. Yeah, that's right. For a company that has used elaborate stories and excellent lore to create space Nazis and make them the most powerful humans in the universe, giving its 2,600 ordinary workers an equal split of the £10.6 million special bonus on top of a $2.6 million profit share. Pretty damn good. You see that, Jerry? You see that, Jerry? This is how you treat people. You don't steal from a government and then use that money to boost your own back pocket profits, building a throne of lies, deception, and theft for you to sit upon like the god Khorne's throne of skulls. Unless, of course, you're Nurgle, the chaos god of plague. Then I guess plague profiteering is pretty low on the crimes list. I think the only thing that stops it from being worse than war profiteering is that you can't start a plague, whereas a country can just go to war whenever they feel. But it's a pretty tight balance. Jerry's employees can be heard from the front of the stores as they finish morning meetings with their battle cry, "Cash for the Cash God!" Moving on to moral panic news! Victoria. Proof that sports and art can live in harmony as long as sports is more popular. But even Victoria enjoys a good moral panic every so often, doesn't it, Dictator Dan? And you better believe moral panic is back, baby! I do enjoy a good moral panic as long as I'm not the center of it. What will it be? Suffering children, Illuminati, the devil. Oh, so many options, I can barely contain myself. Victoria will join a growing number of states and countries that have decriminalized sex work and regulated the industry in a move described as world-leading by sex worker rights groups. Under current laws, street-based sex work is a crime in Victoria, but selling sexual services at registered brothels and escort agencies or as a private sex worker is permitted under the strict licensing regime. Sex workers have repeatedly called for an overhaul of the current legal framework, claiming the system is complex and unnecessarily confusing and leaves workers vulnerable to prosecution. Well, in a surprise act from a dictator, Dan Andrews announced his government would begin a 2-year legislative overhaul, starting with the removal of offences and criminal penalties for consensual sex work. And boy, oh boy, has it pissed conservatives off. Surprisingly, not our friends at News Corp. No, no. This goes all the way to the top. God, the big one, the big dictator. As Catholic Weekly claims that this is a win for organised crime, bikies and drug dealers, because apparently it is now acceptable to have an underclass of women available for men's sexual use and abuse, which is a huge leap of logic from making an industry safer by regulating it, ensuring there are health services, and meaning the women who work in it can safely call police if they're in trouble, as they won't be in danger of getting arrested. But here are some moral panic talking points brought up by the Catholics in their news. Sex industry businesses can locate in areas the same as any other business, such as in commercial and residential zones. Sex industry businesses do not need a license, and there is no planning permit requirements for home-based brothels. Brothels will be able to sell alcohol, which raises concerns about the health and safety of workers now having to deal with intoxicated customers. Changes to restrictions on brothel size could lead to mega brothels, as seen in Germany. Fewer restrictions on sex industry advertising may expose the public to sexually objectifying marketing. Ooh. Now, I'm unaware of where they're getting their info on these, but these changes, according to the government's own release, say it will be regulated just like any other industry by agencies like WorkSafe and the Department of Health. There isn't any word about the sale of alcohol in the release. Planning and zoning controls will be implemented to reduce harm for sex workers and to meet the community's expectations. And I am sure most communities won't be looking to have a mega brothel built down the street. Not that the corner of your panic room is zoned for a mega brothel, but it seems that your fears, like God, are everywhere. And it clearly states controls and restrictions on advertising sex work services will be reviewed. If any group should understand that a review doesn't necessarily mean a change, it should be the churches. The Royal Commission into Religious Institutions and Child Sexual Assault within outlined the nature and the extent of the abuse, its impacts, and survivors' experiences of disclosing it. It examined common failures in institutional responses and drew out factors that may have contributed to the occurrence of abuse and to inadequate responses. It made recommendations to prevent child sexual abuse from occurring in religious institutions and, where it did occur, to ensure that responses are appropriate and effective. And yet, the Hillsong Church just revealed itself to be one of the latest members of the Hide the Pedophile Club. Maybe those who live in glass God's houses shouldn't throw stones. Here, we see the wild online commentator present their moral panic as part of their conspiracy dance. The conspiracy dance is done to attract like-minded moral panickers. There is an image floating around Facebook that posits that now that sex work is decriminalized, that Centrelink's new powers to cut people off if they refuse to work will mean that Centrelink and job service providers will be forcing people into sex work on threat of cutting them off from Centrelink. Let me just take a quick look. Just because you connect two things with a piece of red string doesn't mean you've uncovered a conspiracy. I can tell you, nobody is forcing anybody to go into sex work. At least not from the government. Not only because we are a judgment-fearing country who allows the doctrine of the church to guide us, even in religiously nebulous states like Victoria, but also because there are plenty of legitimate forms of paid work that could tick the boxes for job service providers so they can get that sweet, sweet government bonus. Like the arts or stand-up comedy, both legal ways of making money, but when I mention that I want to write and perform to Centrelink or to a job service provider, they make a bigger deal out of it than being an unreliable source of income than my parents ever did. The reason there are so many podcasters isn't because job service providers have found a loophole. It's because we are narcissistic species who have a legacy to leave. And you should hear all about it in my new podcast, The Legacy. You will remember me more than any of those others because I was the one calming force in the sea of narcissism, obviously. The fact that The Age had to write the sentence, "Laws to protect children and workers from coercion and address other forms of non-consensual sex work will continue to be enforced," says everything you need to know about what we're working against here. At least sex workers don't have Transport Matters Party member Rob Barton defending them. Because he'd be out there being like, "Oh, sure, sex workers get taken every day, but they can't get them all." Sky News News now! Sky News. The Australian remake of Fox News, and the first thing you see on the other side of the warp if you worship the fifth chaos god, Murdoch. Sky deleted dozens of videos from YouTube which promoted unproven COVID treatments. At least 31 videos that questioned the public health response to COVID-19 or promote unproven treatments were uploaded by the broadcaster, and Sky News will face the media diversity inquiry after the broadcaster was suspended from YouTube for 7 days for posting videos that violated the platform's COVID medical misinformation policies. 31 is definitely enough that you can't claim plausible deniability, especially when you then go and remove the videos from your own website. YouTube can't make you do that. I know it's fun to pretend you're being oppressed, dressing up in oppressed face and saying words in an outraged way. I enjoy pretending to flip a table in a fake outrage. It's a great time. I'm only human. You just gotta be like, no, no. Yeah, it's tons of fun. But you've been out here drawing attention to yourself. Now, Sky News Australia has to face a Senate inquiry. The hearing comes as former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd called on the Australian media regulator to take a tougher line on the broadcasting of continuous Sky News material on subscription TV and free-to-air television in regional areas. And that Kevin Rudd is at the forefront of this charge must just make Rupert Murdoch so mad. He worked hard to create a media landscape of mistrust and lies and then use that power to undermine any PM who wasn't on Team Murdoch. And now, look at this. Lachlan Murdoch has been invited to appear before the Senate inquiry. He still gets to decide, even if he will show up, or if he'll just disseminate his opinions through his media empire, as is the traditional way of getting to know what a Murdoch thinks or wants. Presenters Alan Jones, Rita Parnie, and Rowan Dean have already agreed to give evidence before the Media Diversity Committee. Whether they will be presenting their own thoughts or those of their boss will be determined on the day. Greens Senator Sarah Hanson-Young told Guardian Australia, "Mr. Murdoch had the opportunity on Monday to put his case to the Senate inquiry. I look forward to asking the co-chairman about the standards of journalism and accurate reporting at Sky News and across Australia's most dominant media company. And frankly, I look forward to hearing those questions." Sarah Hanson-Young does not mess about.
"Because you are not fit to be in this chamber, you're not fit to represent your constituents, and you're not fit to call yourselves men. Senator O'Sullivan, Senator Anning, Senator Bernardi, Senator Lionhelm, you day after day come into this place and hurl insults across this chamber, play the gender card, and the moment anyone stands up to you, you have the most fragile glass jaws of all. You
Order.
Are cowards.
Order.
Every time you get
Senator,
called out,
Senator
you
Hanson
refuse
Young.
To be stand to stand
Senator
by
Hanson
it.
Young, Senator Wong on a point of order.
Fraser Anning, Barry O'Sullivan, David Lionheart, and Corey Bernardi are now all former senators. Not specifically because of this. They had a big hand in their own undoings. A fact that I learned while studying journalism is that the ACMA, the Australian Communication and Media Authority, basically has no teeth. Nobody is scared of them. They are the PSO of the media authorities. We see them and occasionally they yell at someone, but nobody takes them seriously. Media Watch is the scariest authority in the land. If you find yourself on Media Watch, you fucked up. And this is a particularly interesting fact, as the ACMA has not published its quarterly reports on complaints and investigations for almost a year, and in October last year stopped publishing the figures in its annual report altogether. the Klaxon revealed that ACMA has reviewed just one of the 23 complaints that it has received over Sky News Australia's COVID-19 coverage over the past 18 plus months, and had investigated just 4% of the complaints it received in the 2019-2020 financial year. Just 54 of 1,336 complaints made, and this was down from 74 the year before. Former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd said, according to News Corp's own data, more than 9.1 million Australians, or more than one third of the population, engage with Murdoch's Sky News every month, across more platforms than any other current affairs outlet. He did, however, fail to present the amount of that 9.1 million who were comedians, politicians, and journalists checking in with the bad guys so that they know what jokes to make or what stupidity they are going to be pressing against in the coming weeks. After all, News Corp sets the country's agenda. The big question remains, if these conspiracy theories and this disinformation was too hot for YouTube, the unofficial home of the unhinged rant, surely it was too hot to be broadcast on Australian TV. And that is saying a lot. We have made some pretty weird choices for Australian TV. Two of our biggest childhood icons were a rug with a smart mouth and a faceless mute ragdoll that none of the adults who encountered it had the good sense to send back to the demon realm from whence it came. Making money from the problems you cause news! Philip Morris, the company that introduced the world to the Marlboro Man and made your grandfather talk like a poor man Stephen Hawking.
More doctors milk camel than any other brand.
I know camel's not a Philip Morris brand, but you get the point. The chief executive of Philip Morris International and Julian Assange, if he sold real estate, Jacek Olszewski, has called on the UK government to ban cigarettes within a decade in a move that would outlaw its own Marlboro brand. Final nail in the cowboy coffin after most of them smoked themselves to death, either through cigarettes or by attempting to light their cigarettes on a campfire and then having their alcohol-laced breath spark the flame instead of their head. Jacek Olszewski said the company could see the world without cigarettes, and actually, the sooner it happens, the better it is for everyone. Which, when you look at this, my hypocrisy detector is registering off the charts. We've been pushing for you to get your dirty death sticks the fuck out of here for years now, and suddenly, you are telling us cigarettes should be treated like petrol cars, seen as a symbolic extension of the owner's dick, and the sale of which is due to be banned from 2030? Government action would end the confusion felt by smokers, and perpetuated by Philip Morris, some of whom still think that the alternatives are worse than cigarettes. And while overcoming your desire to smoke by taking up baby seal clubbing is definitely still frowned upon, environmentally and ethically, vaping is still a bit of a mixed bag, especially after Whistleblower and People's Champion Lourdes Liz, a former marketing director at the non-profit foundation, The Foundation for a Smoke-Free World, claimed in a lawsuit filed January 13th that the foundation is engaging in activities designed to increase the profits of and do the bidding of tobacco industry, namely Philip Morris International and its former parent company, Altera Group. Huh. Very interesting. And went on to say, the foundation tries to portray itself as an independent organization attempting to reduce the consumption of products produced by Big Tobacco. This, however, is a mere smokescreen. Very nice pun, thank you. And the foundation has become well known as a tool of PMI and Altera, used to peddle their products, particularly vaping products, and push their message from behind a facade of seemingly respectable, supposedly independent, science and public health research and policy. And fun wordplay aside, this all sounds very familiar.
More doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Why not change to Camels for the next 30 days and see what a difference it makes in your smoking enjoyment?
She alleges that she was subjected to a sustained campaign of retaliation for raising concerns about the organization's efforts to skirt its legal obligations to act independently from its financial backers. Just like when your parents tell you that only if you believe will Santa Claus come and bring you presents. But you are starting to suspect that if you do something and absolutely nobody finds out, well, Santa will probably come anyway. So you start to misbehave just a little bit. But as well as complaining to management about the foundation's promotion of a pro-vaping message to teens in contravention of its stated mission and to the detriment of public health, the foundation engaged in such activities under the pretext of harm reduction, that is, reportedly pointing them towards safer alternatives to cigarette smoking. The foundation did this despite the highly addictive nature of and dangerous levels of nicotine and other harmful ingredients in these products. Miss Liz says she was shocked by how the foundation was doing the bidding of PMI and Altera and was furthering PMI's goal of creating a new generation of tobacco and nicotine users. It's hard to clap back at a whistleblower for doing the right thing and for being the only one who had the courage or moral fortitude to stand up and say something. But come on, you're shocked? Shocked. This is Big Cigarette, and they don't get bigger cigarette than Philip Morris. They are so Big Cigarette that they're trying to get a fresh start by tricking the consumer all over again, like some sort of capitalist version of the idiom about history, like those who don't learn from history are doomed to spend money rebooting, remaking, and reimagining franchise films, but eliminating the moral stories that made them significant. Like when they reimagined and rebooted the Nazis, but forgot the historical significance of all the murders and seemed to just think it was about hanging out with the boys, camping, and yelling. I actually am very unsure what they see in rebooting this particular franchise. We tried it, it failed, we moved on. Like so many historical groups. Come on, guys, you just gotta move with the times. Olszak told the Sunday Telegraph, "Give them a choice of smoke-free alternatives. With the right regulation and information, it can happen 10 years from now. In some countries, you can solve the problem once and forever." Importantly, though, giving them the right information is not lying to them about how bad your new product is. It's a significant detail for you to omit from the whole convincing people to get on board with your new multi-level manipulation scheme. Philip Morris incredibly recently said it wanted half of its turnover to come from non-smoking products as it morphs into a healthcare and wellness company. They've seen how healthcare and wellness groups don't really care about research or looking after their consumer base in any capacity, and they are quite on board. In fact, they've seen these guys do quite the opposite. The more data you give them, the harder they will double down on telling you to go fuck yourself, but in an American self, bless your heart kind of way.
What does bless your heart mean? It's a Southerner's way of being shady.
Mostly by insisting, without a sense of irony, that you just need to do your own research and that way you can truly understand the benefits of a crystal permanently inserted in an orifice of the user's choice. We won't prescribe how to be a free child, you do you. The company has come under fire from anti-smoking campaigners who accused it of hypocrisy after it launched a $1 billion takeover bid for Vectura, a British pharmacy company that makes asthma inhalers. You hear that? Asthma inhalers. Philip Morris is looking to make asthma inhalers. But this is classic hacker taking a job with the police behaviour. They caused all the problems, and now they're going to teach the police how to stop future hackers while making some sweet, sweet government money. Moving on to Snopes plagiarism news. David Mickelson, the co-founder of the fact-checking website Snopes, has been caught out lying to the site's readers when, between 2015 and 2019, Mickelson wrote and published dozens of articles containing material plagiarized from news outlets such as The Guardian and The LA Times. This is all according to a BuzzFeed News investigation. Wait a minute, I can hear you thinking. You got done by BuzzFeed for stealing stuff off the internet? BuzzFeed, the website most famous for stealing GIFs off the internet, writing a sentence either side of them and calling it a day. Well, BuzzFeed News is surprisingly effective. They were the only news outlet to publish the Steele dossier. BuzzFeed News documented how Breitbart News solicited story ideas and copy edits from white supremacists and neo-Nazis, with Milo Yiannopoulos acting as an intermediary, and they published the original story in which actor Anthony Rapp accused actor Kevin Spacey of making sexual advances towards him at a party in 1986. Yeah. Yeah. You're thinking differently about them now, aren't you? It's kind of like when the nerdy guy at school grows up to be John Oliver. Now, you should probably take their "Which investigative journalist are you?" quiz right now, as a means of making it up to them. After inquiries from BuzzFeed News, Snopes conducted an internal review and confirmed that, under a pseudonym, the Snopes byline, and his own name, Mickelson wrote and published 54 articles with plagiarized material. Snopes VP of Editorial and Managing Editor Doreen Marchioni suspended Mickelson from editorial duties pending a comprehensive internal investigation, presumably mostly consisting of putting all his articles through Turnitin and watching him absolutely smash that 30% tolerance, especially as he clearly isn't citing his sources. Though Mickelson remains an officer and a 50% shareholder of the company, he is, after all, an older white CEO. He is grandfathered in under some pretty entrenched laws. You can't throw the CEO out with the bathwater, guys. Snopes editorial staff disavowed Mickelson's behaviour in a separate statement signed by 8 current writers, failing to realise this only furthered the plagiarism that has become rampant among its writers and editing staff. You hate to see someone's corrupting influence take hold so quickly. Snopes told BuzzFeed News it plans to retract all of the offending stories and disable advertising on them, already making them more trustworthy and ethical news outlet than the entire News Corp body of shady reports. Ho-ho! Got him. Mickelson said, "There is no excuse for my serious lapses in judgment. I'm sorry." Then went on to blame his behaviour on his lack of formal journalism experience, saying, "I don't come from a journalism background. I wasn't used to doing news aggregation. A number of times I crossed the line to where it was copyright infringement. I own that." Though, my niece also has no formal journalism training, but has somehow managed to grasp this superhuman concept of not stealing other people's work and claiming it as your own. I suppose she should be put into Mensa or some kind of genius society where she can gloat about her superior empathy and ethical understanding capacity. Whew. Snopes has served as one of Facebook's fact-checking partners between December 2016 and February 2019, which actually got a long way to explaining the problems with Facebook. There's a real Ouroboros of lies happening there. Like a Hadron Collider of deception, and information is sent in a hyperspeed to collide with other pieces of information sent in the other direction at a hyperspeed to create God particles of lies. Speaking of liars who purposely misuse their journalism, Rupert Murdoch is a big fat liar news! Big surprise, guys. Dark Lord Rupert Murdoch has largely lost a year-long dispute with the BBC after he objected to a documentary series that implied he posed a threat to liberal democracy. A Dark Lord he may be, but in this instance, the argument that he is a threat to liberal democracy, well, that's just not true. You see here, a liberal democracy is a democratic system of government in which individual rights and freedoms are officially recognized and protected, and the exercise of political power is limited by the rule of law. And he is interested in individual rights and freedoms being recognized and protected, as long as the individual is him. And he has, as far as I know, never broken the law. It's real easy to not break the law when you have the money to manipulate the people who make the laws. Super simple. Then, when he wanted to own newspapers, television, and radio stations, he bullied previous Labour governments to such an extent that Bob Hawke tried to sully favour with him and Kerry Packer by abolishing the long-withstanding two-station rule, under which an owner could control a TV station in only two markets in Australia, regardless of the size of the markets, meaning that those who held a Sydney and a Melbourne station dominated, and those with two stations in much smaller markets could not grow to a more competitive scale. Bit of Australia history, because I know we all know none of it, and it's time for us to learn. But see, it is all about that individual freedom, as long as he is the individual getting freedom. Murdoch's News UK Business complained that the BBC Two documentary unfairly suggested the media mogul exercised malign political influence through his ownership of news outlets. It said the BBC program was biased and failed to give enough weight to the more positive appraisals of Murdoch's career. Things that they were not capable of bringing forth evidence for, but insisted they existed. A classic Murdoch technique. News UK objected to the lack of coverage of Murdoch's financial successes in the world of business, which might have led viewers to reach a different conclusion about the relative success of his career. Long-time listeners of Bearer of Weird News will know that having made a lot of money doesn't undo that you made it by fighting babies in a secret underground fight club. Arguably, that makes it worse, but I'm told that I shouldn't dismiss things like that straight away and should keep an open mind. So this is me, keeping an open mind. Murdoch intends to take the step of rejecting the BBC's internal conclusions and elevating the complaint to the external body Ofcom, the UK's communication regulator. But they've let Murdoch power creep across the land without halting them, so how much power do they really hold? Good question. Now, this is all because of a three-part series entitled The Rise of the Murdoch Dynasty, first broadcast in July 2020, but the BBC's internal editorial complaint unit has only just ruled on whether its content met the public broadcaster standards, dismissing most of News UK's objections that the documentary was unfair because it gave too much weight to the Murdoch's opponents, gave too much credence to the views of people associated with the press regulation campaign hacked off, or that the programs substantially misrepresented the scandal that led to the closure of the News of the World. I mean, the last thing you'd want is a major, well-circulated news business to be casting spurious, mostly opinion-based ideas that could be damaging to an individual they are about. That'd be a terrible way to run a news outlet, or two. or a newspaper, or 70% of the country's media. A spokesperson for News UK said the BBC had allowed an inaccuracy to stand for more than a year, claiming the BBC documentary series lacked the impartiality that the BBC purports to uphold through its editorial guidelines, and the full response to our complaint is disappointing and unsatisfactory. Going on to say, this is why News UK, News Corp, or Murdoch Brands have no editorial guidelines or make promises of impartiality. Those standards are just impossible to maintain. The series was not picked up by the BBC's Australian channel, which is broadcast on the Murdoch-owned Foxtel network, though they denied this was due to its relationship with Murdoch's business in an argument less convincing than the reason given why you are wearing your mask under your nose in my workplace. Holding a cup of coffee for half an hour without sipping from it is not an acceptable classification for having a drink, Tiffany. On to Don't Forget News. Scott Morrison, a man obsessed with a 200-year-old religion who thinks everybody else needs to live in the past, not the future, is running from the past, like a man who knew his close friend and confidant was hiding the knowledge of sexual assault charges with his precious Hillsong Church. Aw, whoopsie. After claiming official discussions with Pfizer had only started in December, Health Minister Greg Hunt has finally confirmed that the government met with Pfizer last July, that's July 2020 for those playing at home, to discuss purchasing the Pfizer vaccine. Well, that's weird. It's not like our trustworthy government to hide knowledge of a major event happening within their government and lying about it publicly. Huh. Michael West Media says sources told them Australia was given options for as many doses as needed to be delivered in January this year. That's January 2021 for those of you playing along at home. But government officials turned down the offer. Weird. Seems Health Minister Greg Hunt had for months repeatedly avoided answering the questions on the issue, claiming the official meetings with Pfizer had only started in December of 2020. But Pfizer had allegedly offered Australia priority options for the vaccine in July 2020. Now, I can see why you'd turn that down. They couldn't even handle rolling out the financial support to every Australian, so taking on the extra burden of health. You don't want two things to be fucked up like that. Better master juggling one ball before moving on to two. Now, according to Hunt, the government rejected the offer citing medical advice, deciding instead to back the AstraZeneca vaccine. A decision that, at the time, was also a terrible decision because even though we knew nothing of blood clots and could not have known, the fact that they didn't take every opportunity that was available to them for a vaccine during a pandemic means that they're just terrible at being a government. Now, according to UNSW Adjunct Professor of Strategic Health Policy Bill Botel, that advice must have been based on commercial and political advice. And sources say the government could not have possibly decided on medical advice because it wasn't available at the time. So it appears the government decided to go with AstraZeneca for financial reasons. It was cheaper, and AstraZeneca was allowing CSL to manufacture the vaccine in Melbourne. But if there is one thing that will be of a relief to those of us who make it to the other side of the pandemic, it will be that the excellent decision to save money on the vaccine certainly hasn't ballooned into some sort of Rube Goldberg machine of flow-on effects from seemingly endless lockdown delays on supplies because everybody wants the vaccine that we turned down, and an expansion of support payments into the following year due to the industry impacts from not having a vaccinated public. That would have been embarrassing and costly. And it has taken until now to mention that we could have had 40 million doses, enough to dose almost the entire population by the start of January. But we said, yeah, nah, too expensive, mate, too expensive. Norman Swan, the host of Radio National's Health Report and soothing voice that settles your inner anxiety as you try to sleep in a lockdown, recently revealed that in a meeting on July 10th, the federal government met with Pfizer. Three sources told Swan that the federal government sent an inexperienced procurement officer to the meeting, which is totally understandable. You save money not paying for a more experienced negotiator. I mean, they're good at negotiating, so you'd have to negotiate a better deal with them. You know what I mean? According to Swan, Pfizer told the Australian government that the company would provide any number of vaccines, yet the offer was rejected. Whereas the UK, who managed to fuck up the pandemic anyway, went with the strategy of backing every horse, taking options out with all the vaccines, producing companies, and ensuring they allowed COVID to spread as far as possible to make sure that there was a real need for all of the vaccines that they had bought. I mean, you wouldn't want them seeming like they wasted money trying to keep people safe. On the plus side, I guess, is that they continue to mess up every step along the way, and will presumably do so right up until they are forced to call an action around May next year, which means you have about 8 months to practice drawing your best dicks to fill in the empty space on your absurdly large ballot paper, because drawing dicks does not make your vote less valid. So sketch away, good friends. Sketch away. Moving on to You Cannot Control the Internet News. The Prince, formerly known as Harry, and his good lady Meghan have been given an environmental award for their decision to only have two children. The pair have been named as environmental role models for deciding to have no more than two children to reduce their impact on the planet. The entire country of China is furious that they were overlooked again for the 50th year in a row. They've been very committed to keeping child numbers low. Harry previously told British Vogue he and Meghan would have a maximum two children. The couple's son, Archie, was born in May 2019, followed by their daughter, Lily Diana, in June of this year. A pretty reasonable decision, given that they're both now in the arts, and the arts are famously an unstable industry. Seems it'd be irresponsible to have too many children. Granted, Dazza and Shazza from Mudgee, who only had two kids and didn't have a personal fortune of millions prior to selling family secrets for profit and fun, won't be seeing an award for their commitment to only having two children. But you can only give out so many awards every year. Given others were given an award, it seems quite a slap in the face to poor old Dazza and Shazza. 10 recipients got awards in recognition of their efforts to mark the UN World Population Day. Other winners include Emma Gannon, the author of Olive, a novel that addresses the choice to be child-free; Narishi Matisa, a teenager fighting child marriage in Zimbabwe; and Wendo Azit, the founder of Women's Empowerment Project in rural Kenya. This has infuriated third children the world over, who are currently gathering together to attack the group who have given the award, but that will only further the idea that two children are best. But who is this mysterious award-giving group? Seems they are a group called Population Matters, a UK-based charity that campaigns for sustainable human population. Hang on. Sustainable human population. That is a familiar phrasing. Let's just look these guys up. That's the phrasing used by Sustainable Australia. Let's look these guys up. Their official policy is to lower Australia's population growth, aiming for a population of around 26 to 30 million through to 2050. So how are they going to do that? Well, to help achieve this, Sustainable Australia Party will lower its annual permanent immigration program from current post-2000 record of around 200,000 back to 70,000, being its average annual permanent intake level during the 20th century. They will maintain an annual humanitarian refugee intake of around 14,000 to 20,000, according to circumstances. They will limit government baby bonus-style birth payments to each woman's first two children. And they'll provide universal access to free contraception and reproductive health advice. It seems like they want to abolish open borders, the Trans-Tasman travel arrangement with New Zealand, and open discussions on a preferential Australia-New Zealand migration agreement with the total annual permanent immigration program. This is not sounding good. They want to remove immigration from all trade agreements and instead manage it wholly through the official migration program. I'm not liking the sound of this. They want to encourage population decentralization and regional revitalization into inland areas, experiencing significant population decline, including through regional relocation grants and migration settlement policies. They want to conduct a comprehensive inquiry into Australia's immigration policy, including the audit and review of all permanent and temporary immigration programs in order to assess their efficiency and validity for Australia's immigration policy mix. This would include fully reviewing temporary work visas, with a view to limiting their use to tertiary qualified applicants for those specialised jobs, increasing upfront fees and more stringently testing the local market before employment. Reducing working rights, such as hours per week for unskilled and semi-skilled foreign students in order to increase job opportunities for Australia's lower socio-economic demographic, including youth looking for entry-level job opportunities. Yeah, that's what you want to do. You really want to crush the people looking for entry-level job opportunities. Sounds great. The poaching of skilled professionals from the developing world, which robs poor communities of much-needed health and technical expertise. I'm actually amazed that they're interested in Harry and Meghan. The children thing aside, they are the antithesis of everything these guys stand for. They're actually looking to move out of their country and immigrate somewhere else. They've made large donations in support of refugees, as Harry has spent his life not having a job. And being a royal, he is basically an unskilled immigrant heading out into the world to take the job of a more qualified person. But let's be frank here. They're pretty anti-non-white people. So I guess their siding with Markle is a surprise. Even the royals allegedly had some concerns about their children. Though she is half white, so I have to assume that they don't subscribe to the one drop of blood nonsense. So I guess they aren't the most white supremacist they could be. Moving on now to the endless battle with Centrelink news. I'm going to start with this. Centrelink, the horror that just keeps on giving. Centrelink has become the de facto largest employer over the last year as lockdowns, plagues and general incompetence roll across the land. The federal government, being ever so keen to get the budget back into the black that they lied we were heading towards prior to the pandemic, have, in their infinite wisdom, sent more than 11,000 people Centrelink debt letters worth a total of $32 million. They claim that these people were overpaid due to the receiving of JobKeeper. No. Hang on, guys. I know what's happened here. Oh, man, it's very embarrassing, really. They've confused these people with the businesses who got wage subsidy and then made a profit. Oh, it happens. It's like, what can you say? It's kind of bound to happen when you treat a business like a protected class of person. Inevitably, you'll confuse people with businesses and try to take back some of the overpayments. It's understandable. Not that I'm averse to people who are overpaid paying it back, assuming that the debt is in fact a legal debt. But what's good for the welfare recipient is good for the Harvey Norman. Services Australia told Senate estimates 11,771 people have had a debt raised. After the completion of a review of their income support payments and the JobKeeper income that was paid to them by their employer. As of April 30th, 2021, approximately $32.8 million in debt has been raised through completed reviews. The agency told Green Senator and Cool Aunt, who taught you everything worth knowing in your collection of knowledge, Rachel Seward. Seward said, "The data revealed a double standard between individuals receiving income support and businesses who claim the wage subsidy." She said, "It is farcical that the government is chasing individuals for so-called debts for what will be genuine mistakes in a confusing system when they have given millions to billionaires. People on welfare are required to report their income from other sources to Centrelink, with the information used to calculate how much money they are eligible to receive. Services Australia staff will check the income reported by the person against tax records and any other evidence, or at least that's what they claim. But we've seen more thorough looking from Bluey in a game of hide and seek."
Okay, you all hide and I'll seek. Go!
Hang on.
Yeah, hang on a minute.
We'll only hide if you promise not to forget you're looking for us.
I've never done that.
Yes, you have.
It was a now discontinued version of this process that led to the Robodebt scandal. Robodebt. That's our secret word of the day! Services Australia officials told Senate estimates earlier this year that welfare recipients had an obligation to report JobKeeper as ordinary income, which is fine. If people made genuine mistakes, they should be fixed up in a way that is reasonable to the person who has to pay them. But when a business, a church, or another church, or say Louis Vuitton, accidentally claiming 6 million, say that they made an honest mistake, that is some upmarket fraud. Well worth the extra money for the label. That's how you know it's valuable. A Morrison government spokesperson was quick to assure people that there was no double standard because both programs have strong compliance frameworks. Yes, under JobKeeper, where businesses misreported against the eligibility criteria, the ATO has the power to recover overpayments. They just refuse to use those powers against businesses. I mean, why chase businesses when poor people are much easier to bully? Now, I am obliged to point out that as of July, $284 million in overpayments has been identified, and approximately $138 million of which was recovered voluntarily. So, returned is sort of the correct term. Recovered certainly implies that they asked for it, when really it was more like the ATO walking into a room and saying, "Hey, come on, give it back, give it, don't make me enact my power to recover payments." You're right, I won't. Same spokesman said, without a hint of irony, seemingly not understanding that we are arguing for the same outcome, that it was a long-standing responsibility of individuals receiving JobSeeker or related payments to report their earnings accurately, saying this process ensures our social security system is sustainable into the future because it means taxpayers only pay recipients what they're eligible for. No more, no less. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what we are asking for, dude. But from businesses. I know, you don't like asking for stuff from businesses. It makes you all squirmy, like the time that you asked the coolest girl in school to the formal, and then you were rejected then too. Even when we thought that strange uncle, independent Senator Rex Patrick, would ride to our rescue on his centrist horse, the government opposed a move that would require the tax commissioner to disclose which major companies received JobKeeper and how much they had raked in. Even though a similar database exists in New Zealand, and maybe because a similar database exists in New Zealand, and they think that if they do the things that New Zealand does, then soon we'll all be like smoking weed in Hobbiton while a woman is in charge. Oh no, not in my Australia. So desperate they are to avoid this fantasy novel hellscape, they've declared, companies that received JobKeeper during the COVID pandemic are gonna remain a secret. Whew, exactly what we were asking for. And to be honest, making $4.6 billion in JobKeeper disappear is a pretty good trick. definitely a better trick than the one from Now You See Me. And they never revealed their secret. Or maybe they did. I don't know. I never watched it. But a good magician never reveals their secrets. That money went to businesses that increased their turnover at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. Or rather, 2.3% of a Bezos was handed over to people who didn't need it while people risked death going to work during a pandemic. I think that's the most accurate way to describe it. Creating the newest pipeline method from Pipeline Inventions. A much better way to launder money to businesses than sports rorts or a parking lot rort. This was done as a means of helping people. See, JobKeeper is a one-in-a-lifetime banana stand, and Scott Morrison is a way less relatable George Bluth.
Trying to find some money for the family.
There's always money in a banana stand.
Alrighty. Oh. Welcome to the end. Welcome to the end of the show, end of the podcast. I thank those of you who hung around and listened to it all. I would just like to say it's looking like things might start to open up towards the end of the year. I don't know. Things are a bit up and down at the moment. We're all a bit unsure. We're just waiting for people to get vaxxed. If you can, book your vaccine. Go get your vaccine if you're able to. And that'll help us all move forward. I am developing my new show, and I've got a couple of festivals that are sort of booked in. I'll be in Perth for the Fringe World at the start of the year, and I'll be in Adelaide for the Adelaide Fringe. Times and stuff aren't booked in yet. My new show is called Wage Against the Machine, and it's a collection of satire and stories from jobs that I no longer have to worry about being fired from. I think it'll be a good time, and I think you guys will enjoy it. If you like this show, and if you enjoy what I'm doing here, I think you'll get a kick out of it. So come check it out in any festival that it might appear in. I think the best way for you to support this podcast and to allow me to keep doing it is to support my shows. So come check out the shows, throw some money my way, and come check out the podcast in the future. I've got a bunch of stuff going on, sort of, and I'll see you there, hopefully. The very least, throw some money my way. Bye. Wash your hands, stay safe, and look after yourselves. Get vaccinated.